listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, Bradley.
What do you call a domicile built from the bones of a legendary NBA legend?
Not sure.
A shack.
I actually had my suspicions.
Wow. I'm laughing at your reaction, Bradley. But also like, oh, okay, that's it. Yeah, a shack.
Yeah, because he'd be big enough for that to happen.
Yeah, he's got big bones.
If you think about it, logistically, yeah. I mean, right?
Now, where was that during our winning time review?
That's a good question.
This film, though, American Dreamer, starring Peter Dinklage and Shirley MacLaine as Phil and Astrid. Phil is a college professor who wants to buy a $10 million house, but his accountant's all like, but you're broke, bro. His accountant, played by Matt Dillon.
That's his real estate agent.
Oh, real estate agent. Sorry. His real estate agent is letting him know that he can't afford a $10 million house, let alone a six-figure house. He sees a listing on, some bizarre-ass newspaper, internet listing, probably Craigslist. I don't know what it would be in the States. Do you guys have Craigslist?
Yeah, I think Craigslist, is, that's still a thing, I think. Have you been on there lately, Melina? Have you heard lately?
I have heard of it, and I have watched other people attempt to make legit purchases through them. And the results are
kind of shaky.
They're overwhelmingly hilarious.
So he sees this newspaper listing. It's for a $10 million house, but he can have it for, I believe the price was $50,000.
$250,000.
As long as, very, 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 very underpriced. As long as he accepts the term of a live-in contract, he would live in the house, the specific quarters, specific area, while Shirley MacLaine does a run out the clock and is allowed to die there in her house, which she loves. So he's like, that's awesome. I'm going to jump all over that because I deserve to live in a mansion. He's kind of a, I wouldn't say self-entitled asshole, but.
But he is.
but he is. He's got some issues. And through living in this house, being intimate, to say the least, with some of his students who are adults, finding a friendship with Astrid, and kind of finding, if you could call it, a friendship with Astrid's children, who think he's a creep that just wants to steal the house and their inheritance from them.
Surprise children. Children that...
Yeah. He had no idea they existed. Neither did the realtor. Yeah. Exactly.
Somehow, we live in this bizarre world where real estate agents don't do background checks on the people that they sign with.
Do you think Matt Dillon sells that explanation? Like, I think he kind of does.
I believe background checks, or at least Facebook checks, are a requirement of someone at that level.
My favorite line of his in the whole movie is at the end. It's like, my wife checks our house on Zillow to see what her half is worth.
That was a funny one.
So Phil slowly discovers, I don't think this is a spoiler, but the American dream isn't stuff, it's people. people that you care about and care about you. I don't mean to sound like blah when
well,
I say that.
That's a spoiler to me. No, I'm just kidding.
It's probably a spoiler to anyone who has heard the premise. Because from there, I think you can probably guess where this might be going.
Well, I do want to say it is a comedy and it's very dry. And I think the premise overall is a little silly. Like, Peter Dinklage isn't like a very young man. Why wouldn't he have discovered this years ago? And I don't know. That comes off as rude, me saying that. But with yes. me to with me to talk about it.
From you, especially, Bradley.
Yeah.
From his cushy little Canadian position. Yeah.
With me to talk about the movie. And I apologize to both of you. I don't think I've introduced you in a review in years. But since we often gel so well, I forget. Frank and Melina are with us, everybody.
Yeah, and to be fair, we've been talking already for upwards of an hour. The only difference is we just hit record a few minutes ago. So it's like, you know, we're just carrying on.
As is custom. It's all just a big flow of, it's a big stream of consciousness.
Yeah, basically, with movie titles thrown in.
I think this works very well as a comedy. Like I said, the message of people matter. Like, yeah, okay, I've seen it. And I've seen it better. But as a comedy, I really liked it. How did you two feel about this cast, the jokes, and the drama and comedy mix of the whole thing?
I think the comedy, I think you're right. The comedy here is really superb. It's because it's the comedy of just the tragedy that is his life and the tragedy of like how much he's trying to get out of. I mean, he already starts in a very like depressive place. In a downtrodden state, and the more he tries to get out of it, the more he falls further down, the more he's plunged further downwards, and that in itself is funny, because it's, you know, I think the quest for the American dream is so maddening and becomes more and more hard to attain every year, you know, the conventional American dream that's been sold to everybody for decades, that his desperation to get it, it's so much fun to watch, to see him sink further down, go to depths that he probably never thought he would go to in order to achieve it and then try and keep it. That always is played for very subtle laughs. And I think that the humor here is the dialogue here is really where a lot of the humor is. He's got this, he runs into a student one time and the student says, you know, you're my favorite professor. Oh, you must be a freshman. And, you know, he's and he, at one point he tries to like, you know, get on the good side of Astrid's daughter with some box wine, and he says to, and she's like no, he's like, oh come on, you have nothing to lose but your demureness. But I think when it tries to go for conventional laughs, like conventional like laugh out loud humor, I think it falls on its face. I think that's when it doesn't work in the comedy department. He tries to look up Astrid online at one point and he comes across like some old lady porn. And someone who's, oh my God, someone walks by and sees him. And it's like, oh, that's hilarious, but it's not. It's not. And that those moments, thankfully, there aren't that many. But when they do happen, they do stick out because that's not where this movie's initial tone is. And that's not where its comedic strengths are.
Yeah, I'm really glad you guys liked it, or it sounds like you did.
We're just talking about the comedy, because I was not on board with a couple of things structurally about this.
And yeah, Frank, I'm really glad that you actually made the distinction between the comedy as a whole and the comedic dialogue, because the comedic dialogue is the one aspect of it that I did think consistently worked. I do think that is in a small part due to the actual script. Mostly I give credit to Peter Dinklage, who I think is just so good at delivering these lines in just the most cantankerous, deadpan way possible. I mean, he reminded me of a really good friend of mine to the degree where I almost called him up and was like, oh my God, I think I just saw a movie about you.
Some actors can make pathetic really funny.
Yeah, they can make someone who would seem pathetic seem more self-aware and in some ways sympathetic to the audience than they otherwise could ever be. The comedy as a whole, I thought, was just very middle of the road slapstick most of the time, like right down to what you were saying before with the, oh God, yeah, we live in this fictional world where if you type in a person's name, you're going, the first thing you're going to get is old lady porn.
And he should probably know how to use a computer. He's a writer.
And a college professor as well, you know.
Yeah, and a college professor.
But then there's also, you've got the classic, oh, somebody opened a window and now they fell out, or oh, I turned the shower on and the water's too hot and now I'm hitting my head on the floor. It's so much of that is going on. And the comedy for me in that regard was distracting, because for so much of this, I expected this to turn into some kind of thriller. I don't know if you guys thought that too, but the way that they were setting the tone, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop where I'm like, okay, I feel like something more nefarious and dark has to be going on just by the setup. And I kept waiting for it to happen.
When it does happen, like, that kind of felt anticlimactic in a way.
Because it wasn't big enough.
But I don't know. But also, this isn't a movie where you would do something super big.
Well, for the first act, I thought, oh, he's going to kill the lady. He's going to murder Astrid.
That would have been funny.
That's what I was thinking they were going to do.
I think they put that away before the third act, at least.
Yeah.
And see, the reason why none of this drama works, I feel like Peter Dinklage and Shirley MacLaine are the only two characters that have genuine and beautiful conversations. And all the other people that he loves and realizes he wants in his life don't. So,
well, I think
it's a little weak.
You know, this is like an hour and 40, I think it's something like that. But
it's not too bad. It's not too long.
Yeah, it is. It's quick.
But I think this it loses something in that sense, because by the time that we get to their final scenes, mm-hmm. it feels like the filmmakers clearly want us to believe that they have such a strong bond that goes beyond, you know, real estate, money, whatnot. And I thought, well, no, they've only had like a few scattered scenes together. You know, there's nothing, we haven't really spent quality time with these people to the point where we've seen them actually develop this kind of closeness, mm-hmm. With one another. And I think that's where the movie stumbles. I think at a certain point, the premise is ridiculous, but it's a fun kind of ridiculous. And it's almost like got like a literary kind of feel to it. Like you could see this being, you know, on, you know, reading this, you know, from a book. But I think at a certain point, it forgets to have fun with this premise. It gets sort of like cautious about where it wants to take things. By the end, we just feel like, okay, well, all right, okay,
that is something I watched.
And I think that if anybody listening to this is hearing what we're saying and saying to themselves, oh well, they're just talking about the movie that they wanted it to be, or they were watching it not letting it be what it was, I really want to make it very clear, I went into this only having read the IMDb premise, which is to say it's very brief. They just like to throw in that term, but it comes with strings attached. So it does lead you in with a bit of an idea that there's going to be some kind of twist to this, or there might be something beyond what meets the eye. You can't help yourself but be prepared. But the movie, I feel, does set you up to think that that's what they're going to do, especially because this is taking place in the 2020s. So right off the bat, you're like, I can't believe that this guy who teaches economics at a college level would be so naive as to walk into a real estate situation like this and be naive mm-hmm. about it as he is.
I mean, well, he's like, he's the dreamer, isn't he? He doesn't want to see the reality that he probably should see.
Right. And the thing is, if you had set this in maybe the late 90s or the 2000s prior to the housing collapse, I would have bought so much more of that as to how you could just go into that and not expect that there would be not expect that it's a big Trojan horse situation. But yeah, I think, yeah, the other big problem is that when it finally does become clear what hand it's actually trying to play, there's just not enough for you to feel anything emotionally.
At a certain point, this does want it to be a film with heart about these two, like, sort of lost souls, and it can't. It can't do that. Not at an hour and 40 minutes, and not with as little as you've given us with actual meat to these characters. I really do like the fact that, because we do see him try to write a novel at certain, you know, every now and again. Mm-hmm. And after every, like, few scenes or so, we see him start a new chapter. That sort of reflects what's happened to him in the last few scenes. And I love the way this film made me sort of question, is he living out the economics he's teaching, or is he living out the novel he's writing, or is it both? And okay. I think it's kind of both in a lot of ways.
Lens probably made it more interesting, at least.
Yeah.
And if they had committed to one of those more than they did the other, then I think I would have enjoyed it more. There was part of me the entire time where I think the only reason that they're including his character being a writer is so that they can do these chapter headings. It feels more like an excuse for a stylistic choice, because his writing career kind of barely factors into the plot.
Yeah.
If you think about it, that's something
that
definitely
that he probably wanted to be a writer at a certain point, and that's something that he's still clinging to. And I think it goes back to the lack of self-awareness, just wanting to live an existence, house included, that it was not meant to be his.
Especially because with these chapter beginnings that they write down, they clearly are in stark contrast to where he is in life. And those are supposed to be a big laugh as well, where it's like, yeah, he's in a relationship that is in the absolute crapper. And then he'll start it with, he had such an effect on women most people would not believe. And I'm like, okay, that's funny, but it doesn't feel right for this film, because his whole thing about being a writer feels like it barely plays into it. And I'm like, so many of the scenes that he has with people other than Shirley MacLaine, I felt were so unbelievably cuttable. I was
yes.
like, I don't even know why this is in here.
I agree 100%,
although,
actually.
You talking about him reminds me of Kenneth Branagh, who starred in a Woody Allen movie called Celebrity. And when he met with Woody Allen to talk about, he played the lead in that movie. It's from 1998. And when he met with Woody Allen to talk about the character, Woody Allen said to Kenneth Branagh, he described him as saying, he's a loser, but he's attractive to women. That is this character as well, for sure. I mean, people are just, he keeps on attracting people for better or worse, and usually for worse. Because,
usually for worse.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He doesn't come out ahead in any way.
Carry that into your final thoughts.
Well, you know, I wish that they could have invested more into this, into the characters, into these two, what could have been, you know, really intriguing characters with layers to both of them. It's a shame, because they're both doing such great work, and they've got really great chemistry together. I really liked the scene with in her living room when they're dancing. I thought it was a great scene, but this movie stopped short. It stopped short at a lot of things. There's a potential relationship with a grad student that goes nowhere. He has Peter Dinklage has an imaginary wife for whatever reason that he sees on occasion with a twin sister. That also goes nowhere. I think this works more than it doesn't. It's got that feel of, even though this is a 2020s film, it's largely untouched by modernity. You know, there is certain timelessness to it, which I really like in a lot of ways. I love that there are no cookie cutter type of characters here, which is always really a joy to see. Because, you know, nobody, I don't think anybody on this call at least, feels like very like cookie cutter. And so I really appreciate when I see a movie where I see a bunch of people who don't feel like they could, that, you know, don't feel like anybody else I see on a daily basis. So I really appreciate that. And I really like watching Shirley MacLaine. I'll watch her in anything. You know, over the last like few years, about 10 years actually, she's had some really, really great roles. She played this really like you know, carefree spirit of a widow who tries to romance Christopher Plummer in a movie called Elsa and Fred. She played this really like bitter woman who wanted to like be in charge of writing her own obituary. So she tried to befriend the local obituary writer at the paper, played by Amanda Seyfried, in a movie called Last Word, which is really great. She was great in Early Murders in the Building in season two. She really is a gift to this movie. And this movie, for the most part, I liked. I wish I could have liked it more. And that's just a simple truth. So I am going to give this, because it's going to be Shirley MacLaine's 90th birthday next month, and somebody asked her during the press junket for this interview, somebody asked her, it's your birthday. It's a milestone birthday, Shirley. How are you going to spend it? She said, I'm going to be on set. So I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10 Shirley MacLaine performances in the future. I look forward to seeing.
Aw.
All right.
Keep cranking them out there, girl.
Yeah.
And Melina, your final thoughts.
Oh, man. Well, there were aspects of this that I did enjoy. I liked a lot of how the dialogue was written, especially when Peter Dinklage delivered it, because he's just amazing at that in whatever he does. Shirley MacLaine is an absolute legend, and she cannot help but be incredible ever since she first said shut up and deal. I mean, it was all Rainbow Road from there.
Yeah. And love The Apartment.
Could go on forever about that. But in regards to this, I think that every reason I just mentioned, if you are interested in watching these two people work together, then that's pretty much the only reason to see it. Because everything else I found just so either half-baked or kind of scatterbrained about this. It felt like there were so many false starts, so many directions that it felt like it wanted to go and either just couldn't commit to it or thought it committed to it. And by the end of it, they're like, ah, didn't we get you? And you're like, not really, because that just wasn't all that exciting. And even the quote-unquote twist that we've alluded to is one that, I'm sorry, I've seen The Big Lebowski enough times where I'm like, I called that from the moment. I called that from your phrasing. I ended up just kind of coming away from this feeling like, well, what was the point of all of that? What is it that you wanted me to take away from this? And that's a shame. I feel like there is the seed of a really good movie in here, and unfortunately, it is just not the finished product that we got. So I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 rounds of blackjack.
All right. With me, you have to go hard when you go American Dream in storytelling. If you don't go at least half Steinbeck, then I dismiss it like this is a failed drama. This is embarrassing. There is one scene that kind of goes full on. Perhaps we were sold a lie, but it only lasts like 20 seconds, and I laughed. I did really like seeing Peter and Shirley act together on a first name basis.
Yeah, because you know them. You hang.
I really wish that everything else was just cut and tossed by the wayside. And we could have just seen a movie about those two. I mean, I'm not saying to cut all the other performers, just a lot of their scenes maybe shortened down so we could build up the important relationship. So many things go nowhere. And Danny Pudi, who I love to see, he's a character in this to be like, hey, I have a plot line to go nowhere, right? We sure do have one for you, Danny Pudi.
And Donnie Glover.
Thanks for showing up. Yeah, and it does nothing.
Oh, God, yeah, we didn't even mention him.
Danny Glover, yeah, I know. That's the detective.
That's right.
He's like, I'm not even going to say I'm too old for this shit because we're all like, just you like, being here, every audience member's thinking it.
It did make me laugh, though. So I'm still going to be nice about that. Probably not a nice number. I'm giving it 6 out of 10 bikini clad muses that you just have to titillate the audience, I guess. Like that, I felt also went nowhere. Like, I really thought we'd get a reveal about why these two are his muses. Nope. It's just hot, sexy time, I guess.
So he's also crazy.
Yeah. And they don't give him good advice. They don't even get him good advice.
This is written by Theodore Melfi, who was, I thought, after I saw St. Vincent, thought, okay, you're my guy. You're going to be my
guy. I like St. Vincent.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of peaked and then really plummeted. Yeah. Because the last did was the Starling.
Starling. Remember the Starling. Oh, God, the Starling. Jeez.
I haven't seen that
one. Don't.
Don't.
Don't.